Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Strategic Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Golding. I'm joined today by Chelsea Luxton, the CEO and co-founder of Paranano, which is a very interesting product. We're going to get deep into that, but we're also going to talk about the fact that you are a startup,
yes,
that you're raising funds right now.
Yes.
You're very involved in the biomed industry here in Oklahoma, which is an emerging field for us locally, and the trials and tribulations of starting a business, especially when you have to get FDA approval for your product.
Welcome to the Golden Group Strategic Growth Podcast, featuring expert insights, interviews with thought leaders, and business plan triage. Hosted by Kyle Golding, award-winning entrepreneur, CEO, and chief strategic idealist for the Golding Group.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you again today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
I first met Chelsea when she was a guest on the OVF podcast, which I also host, and had a conversation about Paranano. Mm-hmm. I kept saying it wrong. Now I'm getting better at saying Paranano. So let people know exactly what Paranano is.
Sure.
Then we'll talk about that backside of the business type stuff.
Yeah, of course. So Paranano Wound Care is developing a breakthrough technology to address an enormous gap in the wound care industry. So currently Medicare spends almost $100 billion with a B,
billion,
annually on wound care. So this is driven largely because of wound infections. So wounds are becoming infected and leading to high cost negative outcomes. We're talking sepsis, antimicrobial, biotic resistance and overuse, death, amputation, like huge expenditures. And not to mention, you know, it's just terrible.
Like, as bad a for human, the patient. Yeah, bad for the people, yes.
Exactly. So in 2020, my company and I went through the NSF ICOR program to really find out where the gap was in wound care, specifically in infection. And we realized that there was no way to tell when a wound has gone from critically colonized, because all wounds have bacteria. Even the cleanest wounds are going to have some bacteria, but that doesn't mean that they're infected or they will become infected. But as bacteria proliferates, grows, you know, and there is a threshold that is reached that indicates early infection. And there's no way to know when that happens. Currently, no product available. The current standard of care is clinical signs and symptoms. Are you running a fever? You know, is there more exudate, redness, pain, swelling, things like that, which are
and fallible. How early is that an early indicator or is that something's already happening by the time that presents itself?
Yeah, if something's already happening by that time. So we're looking at trying, you know, there's no way to tell before these things. So if you're already ending up in the hospital because you're running a fever and, you know, there's a lot of pain going on,
there's trouble.
There is trouble, you know. So we have developed a product that actually addresses that particular problem. We have a flexible nanofiber membrane that goes right on top of the wound and changes color in a definitive yes or no from yellow to green when infection is detected. So it's very actionable, very easy to read. Anyone who has sight and in any care setting can use it.
So you don't have to be a doctor to understand
Correct.
How to utilize this product. And you don't have to be a medical professional to understand as people who,
yeah,
you know, we're all going to essentially you can have a scratch through a cut through something major.
Yes.
That the benefit of knowing how healthy or unhealthy a wound would be on anyone, right?
Certainly. We're really looking at this for chronic wounds, those non-healing or complex surgical wounds, things like that. Because those are notorious for getting infection and progressing rapidly into those negative outcomes. It's the lowest hanging fruit, as we say in the entrepreneurial space. You know, and so having something that is a smoke detector, hey, we are not diagnosing infection by any means. Mm. We are just indicating that there is something going on at the earliest possible moment before those clinical signs and symptoms have really gotten a chance to set in or present. And giving care providers and the patients themselves something that they can look at and say, okay, it's officially time that I go to the ER. I need to call my doctor. I need to send a picture of it. Someone needs to come see me. So the goal here is to get interventions in place. The providers then have earlier diagnoses, and then we can actually make an impact on those negative outcomes, hospitalization, sepsis, keep people from losing limbs in their lives, you know? So that's the whole goal here.
So like a good business opportunity. You identified a problem.
Yes.
Did your research and understood mm-hmm. that there wasn't something out there that was addressing this. That mm-hmm. it was a need. It was causing problems for people and there was a need for it. You developed a product that yes. could address that need. And then you now have to kind of wrap a structure of a business around this product.
Yeah.
And unlike most products that we talk about on this podcast, you have to go through FDA approval.
Right. So.
Which changes this whole
changes
process.
Changes the game.
It's not an overnight thing now.
Yeah. Right. So whenever we were going through that NSFI core program, it was a heavy emphasis specifically on healthcare, right? Because it's not like a compute. You have multiple governing bodies that are in charge of saying yes or no. You can, you know, market this. You can sell this. It is safe for patients, humans, things like that. But then you also have a whole separate governing body, which we won't get too far into because, heavens, we need a whole other podcast for that, about reimbursement. Like, how are you actually, you know, the business model itself, how are you going to make money? Because as we all know in the United States in healthcare, insurance pays for products. Well, when you are a product and you're trying to develop something that's new and novel, you now have to not only deal with the FDA, but you have to deal with that governing body too to convince them that this needs coding, coverage, and reimbursement. And then you also have to go back to the rest of the MACs in the United States and convince them that right. this needs coding, coverage, and reimbursement. So it is a haul. When we were first going through this whole program, we developed, thankfully, our product is versatile enough to address all of the P's of the system. So there's payers, providers, patients, and products, right? So we are part of the system. We benefit all of them, which is great. But that is a huge piece as well, because when you're dealing with so many governing bodies and so many regulatory, so many decision makers, you really have to make something that's going to be impactful for everyone, not just one.
That's the last piece of the conversation is to have impact and to create value
yeah.
for the end user ultimately,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Because if it's addresses a need but doesn't provide value, then it's just something that's not worthwhile.
Exactly.
Right.
And in the healthcare industry, you know, your end user might be a patient, but guess what? The patient's not actually paying for it because right. they have insurance. So then you have to benefit the payer itself. And then the provider, though the patient is wearing it, the provider or the doctor is actually applying it. So then you have to benefit the provider as well.
Right.
So
at any point in that chain of command,
yes.
Other products might have failed, but yours are covering those four P's.
Yes.
So you have risen to the level of this is going to work, but it's going to take a long time and it's going to be expensive, which means how you start this business, how you fund this business is very different as well.
Sure.
So what are you learning through this process?
Heavens. what aren't we learning, you know? One of the things was keep it simple. So
great advice every time.
Every time, right? When we first started out, we actually had a combination product. So we had a color change product okay. that indicated infection, but also released a drug. And to the FDA, that is a complex product.
That sounds like there's going to be concern for that.
Yeah. So there are multiple avenues in which the FDA can send you on. Just a little bit of background on FDA. There's three classifications. Class one is the least worrisome. Typically, you just have to self-register, do some, you know, gather some data, prove efficacy and safety, but you don't need the FDA's approval for that. Class two is a little bit more risky. It's going on the wound, it's staying on or on the body, staying on the body, things like that. Class three products are the riskiest. And so those are going to be your drugs, your hip implants, things that are going
surgical.
Inside the bottle. Yes. So originally when we were looking at this, we were a combination product, which is drug, which takes 10 times longer than
certainly.
Medical device anyway.
Yeah, right.
And a medical device. And so one of the things we learned early on was we have got to separate that.
Good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yes. And so actually it ended up working out because while providers were excited about the release of the biocide, in wound care, diagnostics is actually the spot that has the biggest gaps. So ended up working out for us, which is great. And then as we continue to move forward, it's all about truly what are you claiming with FDA? What are your indications for use? And what exactly does your product do? So for us, we were originally looking at, okay, class two category, this is a completely novel product in that there's never been a color metric, you know, nanofiber sensor that's diagnosing infection type of deal before. So that means whole separate category, which is a de novo pathway. So that's where you have to go to the FDA and you say, okay, here's what our product does. What do we need to do for you to get that approval? And then
do you have to explain it to them or do you have to prove it to them?
So at that point, these are called Q submission meetings. So like pre-sub meetings. So you're just meeting with a rep from the FDA and saying, hey, we need your guidance. You can have as many meetings of these types of meetings as you want. We need your guidance. Like, help us figure out what exactly do you need? Do you need clinical data? Do you just need a large scale animal right. model? Things like that. What type of biocompatibility? So all of that goes into it. But then when we actually started looking at and found the right regulatory consultants and we actually started looking at our product itself and what we were actually going to be claiming, we actually are a class one.
Oh.
And that we're not actually diagnosing anything. We're not taking the place of a provider by saying, hey, if it turns green, you officially have an infection.
Right.
That's not the goal here. Again, we're trying to indicate that something's going on because the provider still needs to make that official diagnosis.
Right.
They need to take swabs. They need to tell you, hey, this is a certain bacteria
over
another.
More needs to be done.
Exactly.
Right.
And so when you look about at the science and like truly our efficacy, it was like, we're actually just a smart bandage, which is a class one device.
There you go. Keep it simple.
Exactly. Keep it simple. And so for us, that ended up, this is what we're moving forward with. This pathway is much simpler in that we don't have to get that approval as we were talking about. So basically what we're doing is we are going through manufacturing validation. We have to validate that our manufacturing capabilities are, you know, up to standards, meeting ISO requirements. We have to prove that it's sterilized and we also have to do certain biocompatibility. And once we have all that data, we compile it. My regulatory people say, okay, pay the $6,500 small business fee and we'll submit it to the FDA and we're good to go. So it still is a process in that you still have to follow the guidelines and the regulatory and you have to have consultants to do this. I would not recommend doing it yourself.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially as a startup. But in our case, it ended up working out that we were able to really keep it as simple as possible. Future products will definitely get more complicated. But in the healthcare, I think it's important to note that if you can phase it in starting with the minimum,
right.
minimum viable product
get in the market,
exactly.
establish yourself, build
exactly.
relationships,
yes.
Build your organization, structure, yep. All of the things that come along with business.
Yes.
Get that in place. And then if you want to expand it to your class
For
two,
sure.
class three, et cetera, right? At least you'll have the organization and the funding essentially to
yes.
do that as well.
And it's also very important for regulatory because anything we do now can be used as a predicate or a precursor for future products.
You're building good credit.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah. And good data.
So this is still a complicated process. You
yes.
mentioned consultants. I'm sure there's lawyers.
Yes.
There's government people.
Yeah.
So that's all very expensive.
Yeah.
So how do you pay for all that?
Well, you fundraise, you know. Actually, we've been very fortunate up until this point to have received a lot of non-dilutive funding from the state of Oklahoma, which has been great. We also received some non-dilutive funding from the Department of Defense, the DOD, through their SBIR, CBIR, Small Business Innovation Research Program.
Right.
And then we've also found some...
Does that also make them a potential first client?
Potential, yes. Right. So... yay.
Right. You know? Yeah. A fantastic first client.
Indeed. Indeed. And then we've also collected a couple of strategic angel investors.
Okay.
So one of them we actually picked up because of the NSF I-Corps program, probably, you know, top three, one of the most beneficial things I've ever done for the company, is go through that program. And he's our official first customer. So not only did he invest, but he also is providing us with a customer base and a reach to over 1,000 long-term care facilities in the United States.
Excellent.
And helping us with our phased process. So not only are we doing a phased FDA process, but we're also doing a phased release, soft launch, clinical trials, hard launch into the market. And he's helping with that too. And then we have one of our inventors who is a burn doc and has been working with us for a while and said, hey, I'd love to actually be on the cap table. And we said, sounds great.
Come on in.
So now we are officially to the point where the non-dilutive game, while it is fun, there is some timeline that takes to get non-dilutive funding. You are competing for money. It's really not unlike VC, actually, now that I'm saying all these things. the competition is very stiff.
It's just a different ask.
There are
obviously similarities and parallels, but yes, it's just a different ask. Truly. For a specific need.
Yes.
That then you'll move out of. And it sounds like now you're about to move out of that need and,
yes,
and into a more of a seed ask.
Yeah. So it's like use the non-dilutive funding for the really, really early stage stuff. Mm. So proving feasibility, proof of concept, all of that stuff, which has been great. Now we're to the point where it's like, okay, we need to rapidly accelerate this. And the non-dilutive funding just really doesn't
allow you. You need some rocket fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you got to go fast. You got to go hard. And that just takes cash.
Yeah, exactly. So right now we are raising a seed round. We're looking at angel investors and VCs. So my whole life right now is just pitching, which I love to do. So it's great. So,
which makes you a perfect podcast guest because you obviously have command of the subject. You're completely in it. On a regular basis. As you're moving to this stage and as you're putting these pitches out, what are you learning? What are the feedback you're getting now that you're going for a different ask?
Yeah.
What's the reaction, the feedback, and how are you turning that back into your internal process?
So really it's very interesting because you have to find the right investors.
Yes.
Right?
Not just the first person who can write you a check. You have to find right partners.
Right.
That's essential. I want to way emphasize that.
I know.
Point.
It's like,
yes,
truly, because we've had angels and people who have offered us angel money in the past. But then after chatting with them, it became evident that they were going to be a much bigger burden than we were wanting to deal with. Or they did not provide any strategic value, you know, things like that. So it's like, not only it's like you're desperate for money to some degree. But don't be that.
It's gotta be the right money. The right money, the right partners, the right situation,
really
the right vision, the right approach. They do need to bring strategically more than just cash. They need to bring partnerships or access or something. So I think too many people who have not gone any sort of investor route, they see it on TV, right? You know, you get a Shark Tank investment or some movie where someone calls up some rich friends and they just write them checks and then their business is off and running.
Yes.
And it's just not that.
It's not, especially in today's, the economic climate that we are in today. In
2020, people are holding on to their money a little tighter right now.
Yes. In 2020, cash was flowing. You know, startups were king. You could raise money and it was great. And now we're looking at, a lot of people, like you said, are holding on to their money. And so it is a much more stringent process nowadays than it was even a year and a half, 2 years ago.
But it ultimately makes your business better.
Definitely.
When you do find the right partners, you get on the backside of this, and when you are ready to go fast and start spending the money the way you need to be in the market and to compete, because you've done all of this work, you've put the right partners together, the potential for that to be successful goes way, way up.
Certainly. And I think it's important to note, you have to choose the right people. Like you said, it's really important to find strategics. I've heard horror stories of fellow founders who have either taken money too early or I hate to say it because I'm a startup, too high of a valuation. Uh-huh. So that almost guarantees that you're going to have some type of down round in the future.
Right.
So it's like all of these things you have to think about and strategically. It's like, I'm not going to take a $20 million investment at this point at a really low or a high valuation or something. So I'm not going to.
Because it changes your scenario so much.
It completely changes everything. Right. And you also have to think about who's already invested too. Right. Because you want to preserve as much of your cap table as possible while also still making feasible valuation progress. And so it's all very strategic.
There's also the potential that you will go for a second or a third round, and
especially in healthcare.
Then you'll also have to understand, it's such a big market and so much potential there. You have to understand then how to protect your angels and your seed round. If you do an A and B, how you protect everyone's equity along the way.
Exactly.
So you're having to raise to operate, but also structure right now. And you're thinking about the next 5 months, but the next 5 years, and maybe the next 50 years as you make these decisions.
Certainly. And I think that's something else that as a startup, you really have to be cognizant of if you're leading the company, right? Like, I'm the CEO, so I am working with the team and our lawyers to create a corporate structure that not only will support what we're doing now, but will also support our future exit,
right.
Which is important, especially in the fundraising.
Yes.
You have to have a planned exit. For us, it's acquisition. Our goal is to be acquired by a big dog.
And there are many big dogs, and they are very, very big. They're very capable of acquiring anyone they really want, right?
And they're picky.
Right.
So you have to really make sure that at this early stage, you're setting yourself up for success. You are assessing not only your corporate structure, but all of your documents. Every single player that you're allowing into your company at that end stage is going to be scrutinized because, you know, their due diligence team is 50 plus people.
Right.
And they're going to go through every single piece of documentation you have. So you really want to make sure that everything that is being done now is setting you up for success for your eventual end game, whatever that looks like for you. And so it's hugely important that you build a good team and that you create a strategy that not only will support what you need to do now, but also will not cripple you in the future.
Right. Or paint you into a corner.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, as a startup, you're dealing with risk in terms of, will the product work, right? Because we're all trying to create something out of nothing. And so there's always going to be some risk associated with investing in
Certainly.
A startup.
There has to be.
Has to be, especially in healthcare, because unfortunately, while I would love to have this data, I can't just throw this on a human, you know?
It has to be done in a very specific way, yes.
Yeah, there is a process to make that happen. And so there are certain risks associated with that. And so you have to find the right investors who understand those risks too. If you're dealing with super risk averse people, maybe angel investing or VC investing is not quite the space for you.
Or someone
right
who's
now.
Looking for an immediate return.
Exactly.
Right.
Talking about that too. Because right now the market, a lot of the US is really focusing on SaaS or computer software things. Because that return, you're looking at less than 5 years, you're hopefully going to have some type of money back. For healthcare, while the payout is potential to be
the market size is giant,
and you know we're looking at acquisitions upwards of $100 million plus in some cases, it takes longer.
Right.
You know, we've been in business since 2018, so we've been in business for 5 years already, and you know, hopefully have an acquisition in the next five. But that's just the reality of where we're at, because there is so much that goes into healthcare and medical devices and drugs and all of that stuff. Fortunately for us, because of what we have managed to build with regulatory, we're looking at raising this round now, seed round.
Right.
And then hopefully my goal is to just do one more round post this Series A, and we should be done. And we'll be cash positive within 24 months. And off to the races, you know.
It's a good plan. I like it.
It is. Yeah, you know, financial model that we've created does support that. So that's another way that you can, you know, help preserve your cap table and those early investors too. Right. Is how much do you really need to raise? You know.
Only raise what you need.
Right.
Right.
I recently another. Cautionary tale. I heard of a startup that raised like $90 million in a seed round. Crazy. I mean, kudos to them, because that's huge.
Yeah.
Seed round of $90 million. But in my head,
most funds are not even $90 million, much less a single investment.
Right. So I'm assuming it was a syndicated something, lots of different people in that round. But for seed, that I had never heard of that before. Again, kudos to that startup. But in my head, I was like, "Well, what could I do with $90 million? I could commercialize every single application that has ever popped into my mind But again, at what cost?
And what return would you say?
And what return?
Right.
And also, yeah. And you can only do so much, even if you are rapidly growing and rapidly building your team.
What are you going to do with that 90 if you only need 9?
Exactly. Exactly. So it's all about strategy, playing the game.
Right.
Yep.
Now, obviously, right now, the end of 2023 as we begin 2024 is an amazing time in Oklahoma for funding, for venture capital, for angel investors, private, all kinds of things. There's the federal government opportunities that you've already kind of discussed. There's state, OCAST, and the rest are the Plains Fund through I2E, all kinds of opportunities. Of course, we met at OVF and all the things that are coming there. But the state is also, for years, for 40 years, since the oil bust in the 80s, had claimed to be trying to diversify the economy.
Certainly.
Not just oil and gas.
Yeah.
Right? Made sense now. Like I said, they claimed it for a long time. This feels like, for me being in the game for a while, it's only about the last 5 years that they've really seen some movement in that. But one of the places that movement has happened is biomed, is all kinds of things like what you're developing. So for someone who's in this space, why is it important for the state to have picked biomed as one of the ways they're going to diversify? And what do you think that future looks like in Oklahoma for that industry?
Yeah. Well, I think it's hugely important because, like you said, diversifying the portfolio. And there is so much landscape and opportunity here for startups. And then when you look at like biomed hubs, like Boston, for example, that is, you have coastal and then down in Houston or Austin, right? But it's like Oklahoma has just enough infrastructure in place, and they're pumping money into building the infrastructure to compete or at least be on par with these other, you know, entities, these other spaces. And that would be hugely important to Oklahoma. And we have so many smart people here as well.
Absolutely.
You know, we have other startups. It's not just me. There are so many other startups or small businesses who are actively commercializing, playing in this space. Wheeler Bio is one, you know, Allison Conti Watkins Products, Miri Health. Like, there are so many things going on here from Oklahoma founders. And so the fact that the state is recognizing that and providing us support and actively building something that we can utilize. And also, you know, I love helping build this too. It's so cool to be a part of something that is so new and budding. It makes you feel like you kind of have, you know, not necessarily a say, but a little bit of like influence in how things go, right? To really make it impactful for founders. There's a lot to be said for what Oklahoma has done and the things that are in place here, not only with the funding, but the other programs like OK Catalyst, Oklahoma Manufacturers Alliance, New Product Development Center, OCAST itself. I mean, if you go to any of these other mega hubs, there might be programs in place like that, but they're not going to be the level that Oklahoma has created here.
We also have great relationship with DOD because of our manufacturing and agricultural and transportation background.
Certainly.
Obviously, oil and gas industry and the innovations that have come out of that as well.
Yeah.
And now SSBCI funding that's coming through the CARES Act.
Yes.
Like, there's all kinds of, and that's across the country, not just Oklahoma, but
but
we have millions of dollars coming through that are going to be opportunities through OCAST and those partners, et cetera, right?
And I think, you know, the United States is realizing that there are ideas and products and companies coming out of the heartland, the middle of the United States.
Not flyover country anymore,
exactly.
Folks.
Thank goodness, right? And so there's just a lot of opportunity to be had. We are part of the Blue Knight program, which is Johnson & Johnson Innovation. They're J Labs organization, but the deluxe package because we also partner with BARDA. And we are the only company in Oklahoma who has that allocation.
Okay.
We had to apply, we had to be approved, but every single time I'm in a space with other Blue Knight companies or J Labs companies, or talking on panels with Johnson & Johnson and BARDA, I always plug that Oklahoma is up and coming and you can't sleep on us because look at what they're doing. Look at what I've been able to do as an Oklahoma company, but also you know, all of the infrastructure that's being built right now.
Right.
It's so essential.
We could just simply point to OMRF as a perfect example too of what we're capable of when we organize ourselves.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So I think it's hugely important, like you just said, organizing ourselves. Right. I think it's hugely important that we build connections between each other too, because something that you see when you go to Boston is that everyone kind of knows everyone.
Right.
It's like a big city, but it's a small city in that you throw a stone and you hit someone who can help you find funding or is a startup owner or, you know, or know someone that you need to know. So I think it's important that we continue to develop that here in Oklahoma too. We all have to play nice and we all have to be friends because we're all on the same goal here, is to make the Oklahoma, you know, biomed hub a place to be. I would love to see, you know, in the future, I would love to see us get like some type of J Labs location or some type of, you know, smart labs or something like that. Like
we have GE has their lab in the innovation district.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So, you know, a place where startups can come and move into the state and bring their innovations and things here because it's economic. It makes sense. It's better than moving to Boston.
Yes.
You know, I love Boston, but, you know,
they got enough going on. They got enough going on. We're going to keep talent and attract talent here.
Exactly. And think of what that could do for the economy.
Yes.
So it's just, it's really exciting time.
I'm going to bring all this back. We started talking about a very simple product.
Yes.
And now we've gotten all the way out into infrastructure across the country. But when we go back to that product.
Yeah.
The basis of good business, right? You identified a problem, found a solution for that problem, and that solution benefits people. It creates value. It creates impact. And that's the essence of should I start a business or not?
Yeah.
And so congratulations on being able to identify the problem, identify the solution, build this organizational structure around it, go through this entire process, elevate yourself, elevate your team, the whole thing. And now that you're not done yet, but you're through so much more than most people get through.
Yeah.
So I want to congratulate you on that process and let people understand that even if you're not in biomed, if you're not going through FDA approval, even if you're not fundraising, there is still the aspect of building a business and how things happen. There's no single roadmap.
Yep.
There's no single way of doing it. There's no single way to fail. There's no single way outside of being illegal. there's no single way to be successful either. And you have to be adaptable and adjustable and follow the opportunities. Cause I feel like you have absolutely followed those opportunities when you streamlined from the original product to like, oh, we could keep this simple.
Yeah.
You follow the opportunity. Now on the fundraising side, you're following the opportunities and regulation, et cetera. And your place in the Oklahoma biomed industry is also you following the opportunities.
Yes.
Which is hopefully the nugget everyone can take away from this conversation.
I think a true entrepreneur, I see this in my own experience, but you know, the successful people are resilience, right? Yeah. If there is a roadblock in front of you, you're looking at something that you're like, okay, this could make or break us. Guess what? You think your way around it. You pivot. You make a change. So that way, maybe your road is now offshooting this way. But in my experience, outside of being illegal or having a product that just genuinely doesn't work.
That just sucks.
That literally, is just failing and failing. If you are answering a need that is a true need and you have consulted with your end customers or the people who are going to be using it and you still have their buy-in and you're making something impactful for those players in your industry, you can figure it out. There are opportunities. So
hopefully someday soon, if you have a trip to the hospital, if you have a surgery, if you have a wound of any kind, you will look down and see a Paranano bandage.
Mm-hmm. Bio-Z Smart Bandage.
On top of it, indicating whether you have an infection or not, helping the doctors do their job better, sending you home earlier, not returning back with an infection. We hope you avoid those infections.
Indeed.
That's good for people.
Yes.
And remember that came from Oklahoma Biomed. That came from Chelsea Luxon and her team at Paranano. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a great time.
Thank you for listening to the Golden Group Strategic Growth Podcast. please subscribe so you never miss an episode. Follow the Golden Group on social media. For more information, past episodes, or to contact us, please visit thegoldengroup.com.